Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Matters, the show in which I discuss all matters of the mind and in which I show how much mind matters. And welcome to part one of Control Your Brain, Control Your Life. I am Udo Staatsbuchler, and this is the beginning of a new series that continues from where the previous series ended. You will hear that the new series is not all that different from Change the Way You Think and Change Your Life. How could it be? It is what I've been doing very often for many years in my practice as a psychotherapist, and now I write and talk about it. This show is live, and I welcome your calls if you have any questions or comments to make that are at least somewhat related to the subject matter. But I'm very happy to answer any questions on any subject by email. Just go to my website http://www.mindmattersonline.info, where you find my email address. Write to me and I will reply within 48 hours. Mind Matters Online is one word. On my website on page 4 you find recordings of all my previous shows, and you can listen to them again if you like. I'm going to repeat my web address once or twice more during this show and also at the end of it. In this program, I will say a few more words about problem solving, and then I will talk about responsibility, or more accurately, your responsibility. And I will talk also about communication. On last week's program, I explained that problems are a necessary part of life, and without them, life would be unthinkable. On this program, I will give you strategies how to find creative solutions. Remember that last week I mentioned that there are standard problems that have been resolved in the past by other problem solvers. And for those, we need only to use the same formula that they had applied to solve it. Then there are new, non-formulaic problems that need your creativity and your imagination to come up with new solutions. I'm going to talk about strategies to find creative solutions. What both sets of problems have in common is that you have to first clarify the problem. It is easier to solve a specific problem than a vague one. So, clarify the problem before you start looking for a solution. It could be a communication problem. For example, if your spouse tells you that you are not supportive enough, find out what he or she means by supportive. I will be talking about communication problems during the second part of this program at length. Then you need to identify key elements of the problem. Problems come to us with varying amounts of important as well as useless information. Focusing on useless information distracts us and wastes time. So, identify the key elements of the problem before you start looking for a solution. Whenever a couple came to see me for counseling because they always argue, I asked them what they argue about, when and where, and when and how it all started. Identifying key elements of a problem is something where your creativity is very, very useful. Visualize the problem or the relevant process or the situation. Sometimes we can see the problem and all its important details right in front of us. This helps us to understand the problem. At other times, we can't see important elements because they have already occurred or they are not visible. In these cases, it is important to visualize. If you want to drive from A to B in a town and through streets that you do not know very well, you would visualize the route before you drive on. The arguing couple that I mentioned, I visualize also how their life would be. Draw a picture or a diagram of the problem or a relevant process or a situation. Visualizing a problem can aid understanding. However, we can keep only some visual information in our minds at once. Therefore, it is often useful to draw a picture or a diagram. I mentioned visualizing your route through a town that you do not know very well. Should this be a lengthy trip, you will be better off to first visualize and then to draw a map of what you have visualized. Drawing pictures or diagrams helps also often in understanding relationship problems when there are a variety of influences or issues that are interlinked. Imagine being the problem or the key process or the solution. Imagination can help us understand the problem by visualizing it. More understanding can occur in some cases if we go farther and imagine being the problem, a key process, or the solution. For example, when people came to see me who had anxiety disorders or other mental malfunctions, I imagined myself having this affliction, then what I would do to overcome the condition, and finally, how to present my findings to the client. Simulate or act out a key element of the problem. Understanding complex or vague problems can be very difficult. Simulating or acting out some key element of the problem can be productive. Again, an example from my practice. When somebody wanted to become more socially successful, I could act as that person did and observe the consequences. Consider a specific example. Problems often come to us in the abstract. Creating a concrete example helps us explore the problem. So, if you want to determine what makes a person psychotic, consider real people who have become psychotic. Change perspective. If your brief is to find solutions to the crime situation in the community, look at crime from the perspective of both criminals and victims. If you want to talk a person out of committing suicide, take that person's perspective. Here are some strategies to help you simplify the task. And one very important one is to solve one part at a time. And this is something I've mentioned before in different contexts. It is sometimes possible to make a problem easier to solve by attacking one part at a time. When you want to control your life, I always advise to begin with improving your self-confidence first. This is then followed by motivation and then discipline. Redefine the problem. If a problem seems presently unsolvable, consider what value underlies the desire to solve that problem and redefine the problem into something solvable. For example, if I cannot free a person of their mental dysfunction, I give them coping mechanism instead. Oftentimes it happened that once a person became capable to manage or to cope with their condition, it became also easier to remove the malfunction. Here are some strategies to help you determine the cause of the problem. Collect information about what happens before, during, and after the problem. Problems are often triggered by something observable and reinforced by something that happens afterwards. So, collect data about when the problem first occurred, how often it occurred since, how it manifests, just everything that seems to be connected to the problem. Perhaps you find a pattern And then you can do something to break the pattern. Perhaps you find the root cause of the problem, which may be something quite minor and at first glance seemed to be unimportant, but it wasn't. Needless to say that you want to write down all your observations, perhaps even make a chart. Another one is to trigger the problem or make it worse. One way to determine whether you know what causes a problem is to trigger it or to make it worse. I have used this method quite often in my practice, but it can be dangerous. When dealing with people problems, and as I told you last week, most people problems are people problems, this can be dangerous, and you need to be certain of your professional abilities. Consider multiple causes and interactions. Sometimes two or more variables or influences cause a problem to occur. Do not jump to conclusions. Consider all possibilities. I have some strategies involving the use of logic to help you identify possible solutions. And reason by analogy, using what you have learned about a similar problem. Going through life, we solve many problems. Often the problem-solving methods we used and the actual solutions we found effective in the past can work to solve a current problem, which at first glance seemed to be unrelated. Use deductive reasoning. Deductive reasoning involves going from a general rule to an application in a specific instance. If we start with a premise that people do what they think is in their best interest, we, for example, provide employees incentives to work more productively. If we believe causes must occur prior to effects, we can conclude that a huge grass fire did not cause the high level of asthma attacks that started 2 days before the fire. Use inductive reasoning. Inductive reasoning involves drawing on specific instances to form a general rule. So, if you feel unwell every morning after drinking coffee, cut out coffee for a week and observe your well-being. Then drink coffee again for a week and see what happens. Question assumptions. Our thinking contains many assumptions or beliefs and prejudices that have never been well tested, such as those that are based on ethnicity, religion, and social class. This is in-the-box thinking. Throw it out. Here are some strategies using a possible solution as a starting point to help you solve a problem. And the rule is guess, check, and adjust. My favorite formula for this is the acronym PEEP. P-E-A-P. PEEP. Which means perform, evaluate, adjust, perform, which means you take an educated guess what to do about solving the issue at hand and you perform it. This is followed by your evaluation. If necessary, you adjust what you did and then you perform again. This time, obviously, with the adjustment. You can repeat this until you have arrived at your desired outcome. Work backwards is sometimes a good way to go about it. Look at the outcome you desire first, and then work backwards every step to the starting point. Here is a strategy using geometry of a problem solving. And that is quite simple. Do the opposite of what you have been doing. If it doesn't work, do the opposite. This principle also comes into play when a physician notices a patient is getting worse and worse. That may be the time to decrease the medication rather than increase them. if the medications are causing the worsening, of course. I'm live on air and I welcome your calls. Call me with questions and comments that are somewhat relevant to the things I'm talking about. For any other questions, send me an email. Go to my website http://www.mindmattersonline.info. Mind Matters Online is one word. There you find my email address. Contact me and I will reply within 48 hours. On page 4, you will find recordings of all my programs. Feel free to listen to them again. Let's continue with some strategies to help you function optimally while problem solving. Think of options without immediately evaluating them. It is often wise to consider a range of solution options. Several options may solve a problem, but one may solve the problem more completely, or cheaply, or better. Some people may squelch their own ideas or the good ideas of others by immediately evaluating the ideas. Hence, it may help to brainstorm possible solutions, for example, record them without first evaluating them. Even a very bad idea might point in a useful direction if it is not pushed aside too quickly. Very important is to create a positive mood with an optimum arousal level. People work better when they have a positive mood and a moderate arousal level. To create a positive mood, you could engage in some activity you greatly enjoy, such as listening to music or reading a book. Or you could think back about huge triumphs and outstanding moments in your life. To avoid excessive arousal, you could also use relaxation methods such as deep breathing, tensing and relaxing muscle groups, and telling yourself to stay cool, calm, and collected. Very important is think confidently. Confidence helps us persist in problem solving, and the confidence comes most powerfully from problem-solving success. So, think about past problem-solving successes or solve another smaller problem to boost your confidence about solving a specific problem. Useful thoughts such as, I have solved more difficult or similar problems, or I know how to approach this problem, or I can solve this problem if I have a real go at it. Take a break. People can get fixed on a certain way of thinking about a problem or a specific class of possible solutions. This can lead to running in circles. You are focused on one particular aspect of the problem and one particular way to solve it. Whatever you do, you come back to these two aspects. You are boxed in, and you cannot think yourself out of this box. I think we all have experienced this phenomenon. The only way to get out of it is to take a break and think about matters totally unrelated to the problem in order to open the mind to new ideas. Some people even benefit from sleeping on a problem. Persist. Persistence in problem solving often pays off. It may take you some time to solve a problem, but your odds of success go to zero when you give up. With continued effort, you have a chance. If one possible solution fails, go with another one or use a different problem solving strategy. Here are some strategies to help you solve multiple problems. Adopt a problem-solving orientation. People who look for problems to solve have a decided advantage over others. These individuals can often identify problems when the problems are small enough to be easily solved and when enough time is available to allow the use of good problem-solving strategies. Individuals who wait for problems to become unbearable or unavoidable before dealing with them may experience unnecessary stress when circumstances force them to tackle a problem. Naturally, looking for problems to solve will tend to lead to more problems solved. Solve one problem at a time. This is something I mentioned a few times before. When faced with multiple problems, individuals may panic or lose hope and then quit trying. When facing more than one problem, focus on solving one at a time. Solve one and then move on to the next one. Now let us move on to something different. Over the course of my past 5 talks, I told you in order to change your life, you want to become more self-confident. You want to become motivated. You need discipline. You needed determination. You needed to set goals. You needed to have problems and you would have to solve them. It is all you, you, and you again. Is there nobody who's going to do any of these things for you? Is there nobody who takes responsibility for you and moves you along? No, there's nobody. You have to do it all, under my guidance if you want, but it is primarily you who does the doing. It is your doing and also your responsibility. Remember when I spoke about goal setting and I said that the goals have to be under your control? They should be your goals, your decisions to aim for them, and therefore also your responsibility to achieve them. Everything is your responsibility. And that's what we are going to talk about now, your responsibility. I said, everything you do is your responsibility, and that's a fact. Almost everything that happens to you is also your responsibility. There are a few exceptions, such as some illnesses that may befall you without you being at fault. Obviously, there are also some that you invite in. Accidents can happen to you through no fault of yours. You're probably also not the cause for a major earthquake or hurricanes. But if you get caught, for example, in a money scam in which someone promises you 30% interest on your investment and you fall for that scam, that's your fault and therefore your responsibility. You were greedy and greed clouded your judgment and made you blind and stupid. It is not the responsibility of the crooks. They only do what they choose to do. It is your responsibility, only yours. When talking about problems, I pointed out to you to examine yourself if you are not the cause of the problem. If the problem you encounter is a problem of misunderstanding, how exact and precise were you in your communication? Was everything clearly explained without room for ambiguity? Did you listen carefully when something was explained to you, or did you start formulating your response in your mind soon after the explanation had started? This is a theme that, as I said early on, I explore in more depth a little later. Suffice to say now that communication, or perhaps better said, miscommunication, is one of the greatest problem creators. It is also your responsibility if you are in a bad relationship. Who got you there? Were you marched into the relationship and kept there at gunpoint? Or was it largely a matter of free will and free choice on your part? If you are not happy, it is up to you to do something about it. If you are not happy with that situation, do something about it. If you are not willing to do something about it, don't complain. There's the old and often told story of the construction worker who opens up his lunchbox at the noon break and unwraps his sandwich to find that it contains tuna. He gets really upset and complains loudly to everyone around him about how much he hates tuna. The next day the same thing happens, a tuna sandwich. Again the construction worker shouts and complains about how much he hates tuna for lunch. Third day it happens again, but this time his fellow workers are getting fed up with his loud complaining. One of them leans over and says to him, "If you hate tuna so much, why don't you tell your wife to make you some other kind of sandwich?" The construction worker turns to the fellow and says, "Oh, I'm not married. I make my own lunches." Many of us get into the same situation as the construction worker and complain about circumstances that are almost entirely of our own making. Is this true for you? So, the first step that you need to undertake is to accept your personal responsibility. What does it mean? You acknowledge that you are solely responsible for the choices in your life. You accept that you are responsible for what you choose to feel or think. You accept that you choose the direction for your life. You accept that you cannot blame others for the choices you have made. You stop pointing the fingers to others and give them the responsibility for who you are and how you behave. You accept that you are responsible for determining who you are and how your choices affect your life. You accept your responsibility to others when you are discussing the consequences of your actions. You realize that you determine your feelings about any events or actions, no matter how negative they seem. You recognize that you are your best cheerleader. It is not reasonable or healthy for you to depend on others to make you feel good about yourself. You recognize that you determine how your self-esteem will develop. You don't feel sorry for yourself for the bum deal you have been handed, but you take hold of your life and give it new direction and reason. You recognize that you are not responsible for the actions of others. You accept that you have the responsibility to protect and nurture your health and emotional well-being. You take an honest inventory of your strengths, abilities, talents, virtues, and positive points. You develop positive, self-affirming, self-talk scripts to enhance your personal development and growth. You let go of blame and anger towards those in your past who did the best they could but failed you, given the limitations of their knowledge or their background and awareness. You get rid of anger, hostility, pessimism, and depression over past hurts, pains, abuse, mistreatment, and misdirection. If you do not accept personal responsibility, you can run the risk of remaining dependent on others for recognition, approval, affirmation, and acceptance. Continuing being hostile, angry, or depressed over how unfairly you have been or are being treated. Being fearful about ever taking a risk or making a decision. Being overwhelmed by disabling fears. Being unable to develop trust or to feel secure with others. Therefore, you will be unsuccessful at the enterprises you take on in life, unsuccessful in personal relationships, and emotionally and physically unhealthy. What do people believe who have not accepted personal responsibility? In my book, Happiness Discovered, I have the blame list that shows 21 different excuses that people give to explain their shortcomings. Here are some more. It's not my fault. I am the way I am. I never asked to be born. I want you to fix me. Life is unfair. There's no sense in trying to take control of my life. Why go on? I see no use in it. You can't help me. Nobody can help me. I'm useless and I'm a failure. God has asked too much of me this time. There's no way I'll be able to handle this. When do all the troubles and problems cease? I am tired of all this. Life is so depressing. If only I had better luck and had been born to a healthy family, or attended a better school, or gotten a better job. There are a few other variations of that one. How can you say I'm responsible for what happens to me in the future? There is fate, luck, politics, greed, envy, wicked and jealous people, and other negative influences that have a greater bearing on my future than I have. How can I ever be happy, seeing how bad my life has been? My parents made me what I am today. The problems in my family have influenced who I am and what I will be. There's nothing I can do to change that. Racism, bigotry, prejudice, sexism, ageism, and closed-mindedness all stand in the way of my becoming what I really want to be. No matter how hard I work, I will never get ahead. You have to accept the luck of the draw. I am who I am. There's no changing me. Terms used to describe those who have not accepted personal responsibility include martyrs, self-pitying, depressed, losers, quitters, chronically angry, dependent personalities, complainers, addictive personalities, blamers, stubborn, persons in denial, troubled people, stuck, fearful, pessimists, despondent, mentally unstable, obstinate, hostile, aggressive, irresponsible, weak, guilt-ridden, resistant to help, passive, irrational, insecure, neurotic, obsessed, and lost. In order to accept personal responsibility, you need to develop the ability to seek out and to accept help for yourself. Be open to new ideas or concepts about life and the human condition. Refute irrational beliefs and overcome fears. Affirm yourself positively. Recognize that you are the sole determinant of the choices you make. Recognize that you choose your responses to the people, actions, and events in your life. Let go of anger, fear, blame, mistrust, and insecurity. Take risks and to become vulnerable to change and to growth in your life. Take off the mask of behavior characteristics behind which you hide your low self-esteem. Reorganize your priorities and goals. Realize that you are the party in charge of the direction your life takes. Your great aim in life is to develop character. Character is composed of self-esteem, self-discipline, the ability to delay gratification, and the willingness to accept full responsibility for your life and everything in it. The more you say to yourself, "I am responsible," the stronger, better, and finer a person you become. And every part of your life will improve at the same time. I like what the German writer and thinker Johann Wolfgang von Goethe said. And I quote, "Let everyone sweep in front of his own door, and the whole world will be clean." I am live on air, and I invite your comments and questions, as long as they are at least vaguely related to the subject matter. I answer any question not relating to the subject by email. Go to my website, http://mindmattersonline.info, where you find my email address. Mind Matters Online is one word. Let us move on to communication. This is a vast subject, and I could talk about it for hours, days, and even weeks. Obviously, I cannot do it. So let me be as concise as I possibly can be and give you the nitty-gritty of it. Communication is defined as a process by which we assign and convey meaning to create shared understanding. Our communication tools are the spoken word, the written word, body language, and facial expression. We communicate constantly. We cannot not communicate. If we are not engaged in external conversation, we communicate internally with ourselves. We create images, pictures in our mind, and we communicate verbally. These images and words stimulate our thoughts. This is a bidirectional effect because also thoughts stimulate words and images. Thoughts create our feelings, which we express with our facial expression and body language. Even if you communicate verbally only internally in form of self-talk, we display our communication non-verbally to the outside world with our body language. We interpret the world through our own personal filters. This means that we have our own view of the world around us, our own belief system, our own perceptions, and our own biases. Whatever we hear, see, and smell goes through these filters and influences our interpretation. Let me put it this way. We are communicating through two channels, verbal and nonverbal, whereby the verbal communication is filtered and also affected by accompanying nonverbal communication, our body language. Body language is the primary way we express our feelings. Words transmit concepts and ideas. If words and body language are not in sync, the result is a mixed message. The communication process begins with a thought. The information exists only in the mind of the sender. This can be a concept, an idea, or a feeling. Then follows encoding. A message is sent to a receiver in words. Then comes decoding. The receiver translates a message into a concept or an information that he or she can understand. Listening is hard work, which is why effective listening is called active listening. To listen actively, give your undivided attention to the speaker. Look at the person, pay attention to his or her body language, avoid distraction, nod and smile to acknowledge points. Occasionally think back about what the person has said. Allow the person to speak without thinking about what you will say next. Don't interrupt. During the transmission of the message, two elements will be received, content and context. Content are the actual words, the language, the words combined into phrases that make grammatical and semantical sense. Context is the way the message is delivered. It's a paralanguage, the facial expression, body language, gestures, the emotions that we convey. In each step of this process are banana skins on which we can slip up and as a result miscommunicate. The sender's encoding might be faulty. They do not interpret their thoughts properly, clearly, and distinctly. The receiver's decoding may be faulty. They change or add meanings to the message that the sender did not intend to convey. Other problems arise if content and context do not conform, if your words say one thing and your body language the opposite. We all have seen newsreaders on TV delivering a very sad message and smiling sweetly in the process. Now imagine if this should happen in reality and you delivered condolences with a broad grin on your face. Of course, there are also cultural considerations. Our background and bias, as well as our past experiences, can change the meaning of the message that we receive. Focusing on ourselves rather than on the other person can and will create confusion. For example, defensiveness when we feel we are under attack, superiority when we feel we know more than the other person, ego when we feel we should be at the center of the activity. Our perception plays a big role. We easily dismiss a person if they cannot articulate their thoughts properly, if they speak too slowly, or if we perceive them to be of lower status. On the other hand, we listen more careful if we perceive the person of higher status. Semantic distractions occur if the speaker uses one or more words different to what we prefer. Example, the use of the word chairman if the person concerned is female. We then tend to focus on the word rather than on the message. Difficult, isn't it? Yes, it is. I'm reminded of what somebody once said. Unfortunately, I forgot who it was. And I quote, "I'm not sure if what you said is what I heard you said is what you mean. But if you mean what I thought I heard you say, then I have no idea what to say." To minimize potential miscommunication, you need to improve your active listening skills. But I just realized that I'm soon running out of time, and therefore this would be a good place to end this program. Next week I will continue where I had to stop today. If you have any questions or want to comment in general on my program, go to my website http://www.mindmattersonline.info. Mind Matters Online is one word. There you find my email address and I will reply to your question within 48 hours. On page 4 of my website, you will find recordings of all my radio programs for you to listen to at your leisure. For now, I leave you with something that also Johann Wolfgang von Goethe said, and I quote, "No one would talk much in society if they only knew how often they misunderstood others," unquote. Tune in again next week, same day, same time. Goodbye. Welcome to Mind Matters, the show in which I discuss all matters.